group of children in Europe during the Holocaust singing Hatikva outside of school. You'll find out why I'm playing that in a moment. But today, on this day on the goods, when we pay tribute to International Holocaust Remembrance Day, I have another Holocaust survivor to share his story. I'm Dahlia, and this show today is especially dedicated to my bubby Rose, because I would not be here today had she not made it through the Holocaust. And my next guest is a survivor whose life started off perfectly uneventful in an eastern Polish town under the old USSR occupation. The town was comprised of Jews, Orthodox Christians, Catholics, all living together, but culturally separate. In fact, I just played Hatikva by those school children back then, because when asked by his Soviet-run school to pledge allegiance to the USSR, he tells me he remembers singing The Hope, or Hatikva, the current Israeli national anthem instead. He felt free to act out against administration to an extent, because joking around never resulted in extreme punishment until things changed when the Germans took over and he and his family were forced into a ghetto. They escape, they go into hiding, and he somehow survives to reunite years later with his brave Polish rescuer. Joining us now, Sydney Zoltak. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Dahlia, and thanks for inviting me.
Well, I know you said to me you will never turn down an opportunity to talk about the Holocaust.
Well, most of us survivors, after being liberated, live with a kind of responsibility and obligation. That because so many of us, or most of us, never survived. Like in my hometown, only 1% of the Jews survived. And I feel obligated to tell the story of all the ones who were murdered during the Holocaust. So therefore, for me to refuse an invitation to tell the story not only of myself, but also of my community, is very important to me. And I will do it. At least I'll try to do it. As long as I possibly can.
You talk about 1% of Jews who survived from where you're from. And
well, I was born in the month of July 1931 and lived in a small town in eastern Poland called Siemiatice, Siemiatyce. And the town was midway between the capital city of Warsaw and the industrial city of Białystok. I was living in that town where the Jewish population was sometimes 50% of the total. We had a total community of 15,000. And sometimes the Jews outnumbered the Christians. And the Christian community was not 50-50, but mostly Roman Catholics and some Russian Orthodox. And we had two churches. One was a Roman Catholic, and the other one was a Russian Orthodox. And it was a city that was very vibrant and had a lot of activities. And I went to a private Hebrew school until the war came, when everything was shut down. But I had a wonderful life, and and because I lived in a town, not a big town, my great pleasure was to visit my grandparents, who lived about 20 kilometers away from me in a village. And they had a general store, and they were living there for many years, where my mother and her siblings were born. And the village was called Grodzisk. And I used to have a wonderful time. And I was taken to Grodzisk, and I was able to play with the animals on the farm and visit the chicken coops and sometimes hold the reins of a horse. So I had a very, very good life, and my parents, who had a store of men's and women's clothing, we were not rich, but we had everything that we needed. And we lived in the center of town in a beautiful home, a two-story house that had lots of room, had all my friends, and had a wonderful time until the year 1936, when anti-Semitism, the activities of violent anti-Semitism became very popular in Poland. My grandparents had to abandon everything, leave everything behind, because of the pickets. The children of their friends and neighbors that would come with signs near the store to tell everybody not to buy from a Jew. And therefore, they had to abandon everything, in spite of the fact that the parents and the friends and the neighbors would apologize to my grandparents. Nevertheless, they had to leave and went to live in the city of Warsaw, where once again I was able to visit in the year 1936, 37, 38, and 39, and visiting a big metropolis like Warsaw, in comparison to the little town of Siemiatice. I would come home and tell all my friends where I was and what I saw, and the big buildings and the movement of vehicles, trucks, tramways, and people moving, actually not walking, but almost in a fast way, rushing, and it was totally different. Also, I was able to go to amusement park, and I had a wonderful time, and I did have a wonderful life until 1939.
So Sidney Zoltak is with us on The Goods, and he's telling his story of the Holocaust. So 1939 comes, and how does your life change? Because you end up ultimately hiding in an open barn. So take us from 1939 to the time you were hiding in that barn.
Well, 1939, about 10 days later, after the German Third Reich invaded Poland, they were in our town 10 days later. And because of a pact that they had, an agreement with the Soviets, that Poland, the Soviets would allow the Germans to do their job in invading Poland and occupying and do everything else that they wanted, that they will be protected, that they will not attack them. And for that, Poland was going to be divided in two. And 7 kilometers from my town, that was a river by the name of Bug, B-U-G, that became the border between Soviet-occupied Poland and German-occupied Poland. So we found ourselves on the east side, which is the Soviet-occupied Poland. And for me, as a youngster of 8 years old, I did not really feel much of a difference because I had all my friends, my classmates, and instead of having a Hebrew school, I went to a school that they taught us Yiddish and naturally the theory of communism and tried to indoctrinate us. But at the age of 8 or even 9, that did not mean very much to us. And we were free. We were able to do everything that we did before, except maybe singing Hebrew songs, and as it was mentioned before, occasionally we would act up a little bit, and instead of singing something that the teacher told us to, or the director wanted us to, we started to sing the Jewish national anthem, Hatikva, and for that we were punished. But the punishment was not severe, and therefore life in Shem Yatitze in under the Soviets was quite normal for a youngster. Now, my parents' store, naturally, it was confiscated, and they had to go to work in a cooperative, and we had to share our house in the center of town with a Russian family who occupied more than half of it. But I still had my room, and I still had my house, and I still had all my neighbors and all my friends. And for me, not much of a change. At least I did not understand that there was a change.
Because we have 10 minutes in our conversation, so I want to be able to get to some very, important parts of your story and questions that I'm always wondering about Holocaust survivors because I never got to ask my grandparents. But when things were at their absolute worst, where did you find the strength to keep going?
Well, under the Germans, naturally, it was a different thing. We lived in our house until 1942, the month of August. They put us in a ghetto, and 3 months later, they liquidated the ghetto. And during the night of the beginning of liquidation, my family and I, my parents and I was the only child, and some of my other relatives and others, escaped the ghetto. And we escaped in the middle of the night and without knowing where we were going. And the rest of the Jews, approximately about 7,000 during the next week, were taken to the death camp of Treblinka and all murdered. And only two of my town were able to escape from Treblinka, and hardly anybody else from that camp. It was not a camp that they were holding people to work. They put them immediately into the gas chambers and murdered them. And as we escaped, we found places where to hide, sometimes in the forest. In the last 40 months, we were hidden by one family, a very religious Catholic family, who saved us and were eventually honored as righteous of the world at Yad Vashem in 2011. And before that, they were afraid to be recognized, that their neighbors would find out or their friends would find out that they hid Jews during the war, because that was not a very popular thing to have done, living in Poland, because anti-Semitism did not really go away. It stayed, sometimes dormant a little bit, but when it came to serious things, anti-Semitism was alive and well.
Do you have nightmares? Do you have constant reminders of the Holocaust? Like, you see a swastika What goes through your mind?
Well, every survivor has some memory incidents, and every little sign sometimes awakens a memory, a bad one. And not only by seeing a swastika, but even when I went to Poland and I saw a forest, it triggered off a memory. So a swastika, we lived with it. A swastika was a symbol of death. And one of the things that we feared the most was fear. We were always afraid for anybody who was dressed in a uniform, and even after being liberated, a policeman was not someone that I wanted to see or talk to or be near, and crossing a border was also a frightful kind of an experience. So fear stayed with us, and it still does. And it triggers off memories of the past for every many, many different things. For instance, being in the situation that we are right now in the pandemic, we are indoor, of course. My quarters that I live in now is totally different than the one the underground bunker that I lived in, particularly the last 7 months that I didn't see daylight. I see daylight. I can go out. Naturally, now it's a little bit cold, so I don't go out. But I have a little bit of freedom, and there I had only fear. So that is the difference between one and another. Nevertheless, it still sort of affects our way of managing.
Are you afraid of another Holocaust?
Well, we've always I guess aware of people in the world. The Holocaust just did not happen overnight. It took many years for the Germans to write about it, prepare, and finally execute it. So, we've seen even in the United States right now the rage of people after listening to someone who only preached hate and convinced them that this is right, and they took things in their own hands and they were violent. And violence comes from incitement. And incitement is something that we call sometimes free speech. It's not free speech. It's sometimes hate speech. And there is a difference. So when I speak to young people, I always tell them that one of the things that they should be aware of is indifference. Don't be indifferent if you see something wrong, whether you're bullied or somebody puts a swastika on a wall or call somebody racial insult. We should be aware. We should eliminate all kind of hate and anti-Semitism and indifference.
Last question, I think that we have time for. After that very strong message you just gave, and I'm going to cut that into a clip and re-air that over and over. the people who rescued you, when you got to reunite with them, what was that moment like?
Well, I never intended to go back to Poland for a visit until my mother corresponded with the people who saved us. And for many, many years, they did not want to be recognized as righteous until they did in 2011 because of fear, because of being afraid. And when my mother died, I continued doing that. I continued to correspond with them. And I received a letter from the last surviving member, the shepherd boy who got us out of the forest and brought us into his parents' farm. If I come to visit you, will I be able to visit you in your home? And the answer was that I will welcome you as a brother. And the truth is that we became like brothers, and we became very close. And he and his wife are not alive anymore, but I speak to their son. And if I don't call him, he calls me. And we are like one family. And they are wonderful people. They're wonderful human beings, but very rare. So some of the things that we want to make sure that to tell the world that there is goodness in the world, but there is also evil. And when you see evil, you fight it with everything that you possibly can. And for us, old-timers, it's a little late, but maybe I put a lot of pressure on the young for them to make this world a better place to live in.
I think you're doing just that, and I commend you for it, because to live this over and over, as you share it over and over, I cannot imagine. Sydney Soltak, thank you so much for taking your time to share your story with us today and for continuing to share these stories.
I thank you very much, Dalia, for inviting me and for listening to me and everybody else who has listened. I appreciate your interest. Thank you.
Sydney Soltak, Holocaust survivor, escapes the ghetto, goes into hiding, reunites with his rescuers, and now he's sending the message that when you see evil, don't be indifferent. Fight evil. I would not be here today without those people who fought the evil. I would not be here today without my family who survived the Holocaust, even though I lost many, including my grandmother whom I had, but I did lose her to the Holocaust. So this has been dedicated to Bubby Rose today. Ani ohevet otach. And I want to thank my producer, Corey Price, my guy on the controls, Callum Fraser. I'm Dalia. Usually I say it forward when I end the show, but today I say never again.